This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, and I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 16th, episode 1569, brought to you today by our auditors. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cussing this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I write a song. Everybody hears and they sing along. Hey, hey.
Woohoo! It's Wednesday. I don't know what day it is. I just flew in so late last night, Glenn.
What are
I don't
you doing
know
here anyway? You weren't even supposed to be here today.
Because I was supposed to get home at 6, and then we ended up sitting on the runway for 2.5 hours because some part was missing, and then they had to put gas in the plane, and then this happened, and blah, blah, blah. Who nobody else wants to hear about your travel nightmares except for, you know, you. So I'm not going to bore you with it, but let's just say I got in at 11, and it was too late to text you that I'm not coming. So I'm a good employee.
You
I
are.
Show
You're
up
dedicated.
For work. Here I am, and I just ain't happy about it.
Are you still there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, barely.
Okay. Skype is having issues here, I think, a little bit this morning. So, well, I just add that to your troubles today.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's probably my fault somehow. But yes, it's
Skype
Wednesday.
Skype is tired, too. It got in at 11 also.
It's yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. It's tired. So, well, let's see. I'm going to be positive right now. I'm super excited to be home. And my mama came home with me, so she needed to exit Florida as well. So she's like, well, I'm coming with you. So she hopped on the plane with us. So we'll have mama here. My husband's home. Life is good. I'm just a little sleepy. That's all.
All right. Very good. Well, we have,
I can take it.
We have a show. We'll have a show for you today. Whatever it is, we're not quite sure, but we do know we have Garden Walker joining us to talk. We've had a listener question on the difference between cowboy dressage and Western dressage. We do Western dressage once a month now on the Dressage Radio Show, but there's also cowboy dressage, and I think it confuses people sometimes. So
I didn't know that there was a difference.
Yes. Apparently there's, I don't know exactly what the difference is either. So we'll find out. We'll find out this morning what that's all about. Plus, you know that little questionnaire that's floating around about, it's called the Equestrian Questions, and people are answering it about their favorite horse and breed and all that stuff. We're going to answer that for each other and see how well, after 6 years of doing this show together, we know each other.
Oh, gosh.
If we get any of those right.
I've had to listen to you talk. I usually, you start talking, I got to go.
I know. Now we're going to find out how much you listen. And my guess is the answers would be about the same if I asked him about Chad. So that
I know. They certainly would.
I might actually know Chad's answers better than you do. Studies show for October, which we never got to. So we're going to do that today and whatever else comes up. Jennifer has a health tip. Jennifer, are you with us?
I am here. I made it.
You did.
We're late,
thank you.
But I'm here.
Yeah, Jennifer's even a little late this morning. So what do we have health-wise today?
We're going to enjoy a chat that we had way back in 2014 with the weed doctor. It's all about what you should and shouldn't be seeing in your bale of hay, because this is the time of year when we all have to buy lots and lots of hay. Sometimes supplies get short. Sometimes we have to settle. So this is, I thought, would be a good time to listen back to that one.
Oh, gosh, this one scared me to death. I think this was after I had found a bunch of foxtail in my hay.
I think you were right.
One. Yeah. Whew. Yeah, that was expensive.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out. Now, you know, and we have a lot of new listeners who may have not heard your terror story that all those, what was that, a year or two ago?
The foxtail?
Yeah. We can all talk
about
our...
Ooh.
That's that was bad.
Lovely. If it's not in the segment, we'll talk about it a little bit afterwards, because it was something that in 30 years of having horses, I'd never experienced, and it just popped right up. So we'll talk about it after the, in case they talk about it in the health tip. I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
We don't remember yesterday. That's so right. It's all good.
I am in nonstop radiothon planning mode. So I don't know what else is going on. I have no idea.
Oh boy. Now you're super quiet, Glenn. So I know you're messing with your volume a little bit, but right, now you're too quiet. That, so
along with everything else going on today.
Now he's gone altogether.
Now there he is. Gone.
All right, is that better? Can you hear me now?
There you go. Sounds good. Sounds good. All right, hit Daily Winnie.
I don't even think I have one.
You're a disaster. I'm the one who got no sleep.
I got nothing. I don't have a Daily Winnie. I didn't write anything down. I've been too busy dealing with technical issues.
How about give a Daily Winnie? See, I'm good at making these up. To my lovely wife, who's working so hard.
I will
this
give a Daily Winnie to my lovely wife.
That I had,
and I'll tell you why.
Thought.
I'll give it to my wife. Okay, I'll tell you why. I mentioned that I was having this leg issue. The doctor can't seem to figure out what it is, and I went to the doctor, and I can't. It's to the point where Jennifer has to put on my sock and shoe for me because I cannot reach my foot without crying in pain.
You're just a little baby.
Yes, exactly. So that's kind
that's
of embarrassing.
That's what I do to Lucas, so it's fine.
So it's kind of embarrassing. So yes, my wife deserves a Daily Winnie just for having to deal with that.
I put on your freaking sock.
So now I go to the doctor and she takes x-rays and determines I don't have a broken anything or no tumors or nothing, and said, well, you need to go see the doctor that deals with muscles, right? Well, I forget what it's called. So I call him on Monday and they said, oh, well, we can see you on December the 17th. I said, I can't drive because I can't put on the brake. I can't even put my own shoe on, and you can't see me for 6 weeks. Well, that's the earliest we have. It's like, okay, that's
like, I'll take it and call me if you have any cancellations.
That's not going to work.
So. And call me in case somebody who was going to come see you that had to wait 2 months dies.
Right.
And then that opens up.
Exactly.
Because that's how long
you're liable to be attrition.
Welcome to the healthcare system in the United States. So anyway, yes.
I don't think it's any better anywhere else. So
no, it doesn't.
So, do you think we have anybody left listening at this point?
No. So let's do the show for us. Let's move on.
All right.
Daily. Okay, so here's the deal. I got a text message yesterday while I was about to board the plane, and it goes something like this. We have our neighbor does our pest control, and she's a horse person. She lives two houses down. And so she came over, and then I got a text message while I was sitting on the plane. Jamie, looks like the Mustangs turned your water on. Your pasture is flooded. I turned it off. It was quite warm today, so they went for a swim. Enjoy, Yvonne. So thanks, neighbor, for happening to come over to do pest control in my house and noticing that my horses probably just spent $300 in water watering their pastures. It was warm. I guess they wanted to play in the sprinklers. So thank you,
Isn't
Zeus.
Isn't that like a big valve? Like a big tourney valve thing?
No, well, there's also a hose bib that goes out to their pasture too. And I mean, my gosh, the horse can undo D snaps. Like twisting a knob is nothing for him. He wants the water on, he just turns the water on. I don't know what to do. I tell Chad and we're on the plane, I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. And he's like, that horse needs to be institutionalized.
Is this Zeus?
Of course it's Zeus. Thor's perfect. He's no problem at all.
I don't have a Zeus bumper. I need a Zeus bumper.
He's that horse. He's the perfect
yes.
for that girl.
Yeah.
We're both disasters.
Here, he deserves this today.
Man, You are one pathetic loser.
Because that's how Chad feels.
He's super smart.
That's how Chad feels about him.
I know. The sun is just coming up now, and indeed my pasture is wet.
It's good they noticed that.
Right? I mean, what if nobody was there and nobody would have, my feeder would have come like at 5 o'clock at night and the whole place would have been flooded. So,
so your chickens would have been floating and like ducks.
Yeah, exactly. Apparently I haven't been back there yet, but all my stalls are flooded and it flooded out all the stalls and then into the pasture and then all the way through the pasture. So, it's going to be expensive, but. You know what? I told Chad, I go, this is a problem. I can't leave town because Lucky cries the entire time and Zeus needs work. He gets bored if he's not worked. So the two animals, he's like, those two animals. Oh my gosh. Those two animals.
We had this discussion on Monday when you weren't here about boarding versus boarding versus keeping the horses at home. And there's that was one of the big disadvantages of keeping the horses at home is it's a pain in the butt.
Maybe I should board Zeus.
There you go. Does your neighbor do boarding? So you just have to walk next door?
Oh, they would know better. But there's some local facilities who wouldn't know better.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And I could be like, oh, hi, I'm just interested in boarding my horse. Don't you have a... Nope.
Nope. Nope. I ran out of room. No room for Zeus.
Out of space. Out of space. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Oh, and then, you know, you can slowly hint as you bring him over, you know, you might want to change that lock and that gate might not work too well. You might want to try this type of gate latch. You know, just... slowly let him know that your horse is going to be breaking everything in the place. Or not. Did we lose Jamie?
I don't have her.
I don't know what happened to Jamie. It's going to be one of those days. Jennifer, why don't you go ahead and get our guest on, see if we can get that arranged. And I'll see if we can get Jamie back here. In the meantime, I wanted to remind everybody that we only, see if we can give her a call again. I don't know what happened. Maybe she flooded. Maybe that's what happened. The water came in the house and flooded her out. I did want to remind everybody that we only have till Friday to get your voicemails in for Radiothon, so definitely send those in. You want to head over to holidayradiothon.com. And yes, I got messages from a bunch of you that our websites were down yesterday for a while. We recorded 8 interviews yesterday, and the websites went down twice, and I was on the phone with technical support. So the websites are down, or were down for a while. There are back up. I don't know what happened there, but hopefully that they will stay back up, especially through Radiothon. But yes, get your entries in. You can find how to do that by going to holidayradiothon.com. And Jennifer is... okay, so looks like Jamie is rebooting and restarting. Hopefully we will have her back shortly. And Jennifer is getting our first guest on, so we're going to get to that in just a minute as well. Tomorrow here on the show is the NATRC Trail Riding Day, hosted by Alice and Jennifer, and then, of course, Really Bad Ads on Friday. So get your ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com, and we would... We need you to also do some audio ones. We only had one audio one last week, so hopefully we have more audio ones this time coming up. And what else do we have going on? There was a very interesting interview that will be coming out today on the eventing. Well, actually, we recorded 8 shows yesterday, so we have a lot of interesting interviews coming out. So we have a lot of interesting shows coming out, including the Dressage Radio Show had some of the national champions on it. It was a very fun show. You're going to want to tune into that. Plus, they had one of the organizers for WEG on, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, on the eventing show. So you're going to want to listen to that as well. But first, we have to find out what... We had a listener ask a question on the difference between cowboy dressage and Western dressage. So today, we get the help help of Garn Walker. Garn is a lifelong horseman and producer of dozens of world and grand national champion Morgans in English, Western, reining, trail, and Western dressage. He is one of the founding partners of the cowboy dressage world. So he's here to help us understand the difference between the two, one of the most popular growing sports out there today. Garn, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I think this has been a matter of some confusion between people. I think it's been a confusion between people even that are competing, what the differences are. And so can you clarify it for us?
Sure. Let me tell you what cowboy dressage is, and then it'll help clarify the difference.
Okay.
Cowboy dressage, basically, in the philosophy of what we do, it's basically about our lifestyle. It's how we live. It's about our morals, how we treat our horse. We're not all about the competition as much as we are about where you are in your life with your horse based upon what you go through with your horse and your training aspects. We believe truly that our main concern is honor your horse, be kind to your horse. We're the only discipline out there that actually emphasizes soft feel through harmony and partnership. Our courts, basically some of the difference we have between Western dressage and cowboy dressage is we still use the same size court, 20 by 40, but we've broken it down into 5-meter increments rather than 6, 14, 14, and 6, like dressage on a short court. So actually, if you look from the top view of the court, it's a perfect mathematical grid. So if you need to do a 10-meter circle, you have 4 5-by-5 squares that give you actually a 10-meter circle. Our tests are a little bit different than what they are. Their basic tests are more like what we do with our Western horses. We actually produce and put together all our tests for a certain reason. Everything that we do things with tests, we do those for a reason as the working Western horse. We don't believe in quite as much compression and collection as the dressage horses do, based upon our Western background. So if that helps some of those people, I hope that clarifies.
So what will your movements contain in that test?
Well, depending on what test it is, we start out with a partnership on the ground where you have to lead your horse on the left and right hand side, going both directions, obviously, and doing a 10-meter circle and a 20-meter circle and haunch turns. That's our basic test for on the ground. We want to make sure that our groundwork is started there, because that's basically where you start your horses within your partnership, is on the ground through your work on the ground, your grooming, et cetera, into your basic leading classes. We go into then our walk jog, which is basically just a walk jog class where we do a 10-meter, 20-meter circle, one diagonal reverse. And as you progress, those are the maneuvers that progress you into the later steps of where you get up into your 4 walk jog classes. And I believe now we have 6 walk jog lope. And then we've created what we call our class with obstacles, which is a challenge class. So we've laid down poles on the ground that, through your rhythm and stride, you learn to go over walkovers, an octagon, you lope around 20-meter poles. So our tests vary on depending on what we do. We found out that our Western people, they like to do a lot of things. So as these tests increase in difficulty, based upon circles and straight lines, we find out we start doing more up and down transitions, left and right transitions, over poles, backing 10-meter, quarter of a 10-meter circle, so we actually start producing more things for the Western people to do.
So no piaffs and passages?
Nope.
Okay.
No, that's sort of what Western, yeah, Western horses don't really do that.
Right, exactly. Know? Not intentionally.
Yeah. No, not intentionally.
So now what makes that different than Western dressage competition?
Okay, so the difference in what we've gone, obviously, is the court. Obviously, it's part of the tests on that. Now, I'm fortunate enough to know about Western dressage also because of this, being that, you know, we train Morgans all our life. We've shown the Morgans in Western dressage. So our horses are nice enough broke, based upon what we've done with our horses, where we can go to the Morgan Grand National, except for this year, because I judged the world finals this year. We've been very fortunate that our horses have won world titles for the past 4 years in Western Dressage. And yet we can take those same horses and go back to Macabre Dressage. So what we have to do with our Western Dressage horses is that we have to step them up that next level into compression and collection. They need even more energy for it. They need more compression. They need more collection in what we do. Their tests are a little bit different. So it comes down to where we ride them both. But a lot of times it's almost, and I know some of the Western Dressage people will disagree with this, but being that I show them both and I love them both, my heart is in Cowboy Dressage. It's a little bit more of a Western saddle on a dressage horse. And you can ask a lot of the people that show this is one of the reasons they like that, especially up in their higher level tests. Because we know for a fact, once you do pee-offs, once you start getting into your higher levels in that, you have to get a hold of your horse more with more compression collection in order to attain those more difficult maneuvers that you do. That would be your difference.
Got it.
Okay. Can you hear me, Glenn?
Yep.
All right. I have a question. I missed a little bit at the beginning, and forgive me if you've answered this. What type of bit are you using in this type of dressage?
The most popular. Well, we sort of look at it a different way, I guess, maybe like that. You know, it's open to all breeds. We have saddle beds and Arabs and Morgan, so obviously the mouths are different on all these different horses. So you can use a Hackamore. You can use a snaffle bit, whether it's a round rig, ed buck, or D-ring, or you can use a curb bit. Now, the curb bits that we do like to see are normally a milder type of bit with a swivel mouthpiece or Greg Darnell bits or something soft, and they're not a solid shank bit. So we allow any type of that, but also we don't allow, you know, our sort of morals look at it this way. You know, don't do anything that you wouldn't do in front of people. So we trust a lot of people in what we do. We're not associated with any large, like USCF. You know, we stand alone under horse shows. We're based upon our morals. We trust everybody to do what they have to do, but we do have to check things on that. So any bit is really allowed so long as it's a Western type bit, so long as it's not severe and it's not wrapped in wire and, you know, whatever is good for your horse is what we do.
Gotcha. Okay. So, you know, I joined kind of when you were talking about doing pee-off in a Western saddle and you need more contact. So I was just curious if
we were saying that they don't do that. That's
what okay. I was like, huh? Okay. Sorry.
No, we try not to. It's not intentional. Is what we were
now, pee-off is not
intentional. The one other thing, right. The one thing that we do have, just so you know, we have our freestyle. So based upon the fact as we go up through our tests, you know, our horses probably can go through that stuff. As the more we do our up and down transitions and left and right and more obstacles, we do have to softly compress and collect and release and softly compress and collect. So in our freestyle, we do have some of the higher level people that if they choose, they want to do some of that stuff based upon their training to up that. In freestyle would be the ultimate of what we do produced on the different levels. So you probably would in freestyle find a little bit more of the classical dressage movements based upon the training that you do. Because it's sort of like when you go in the court, you know, you're sort of training your horse in the court. You're helping your horse become what he needs to be best. So you might see some of that in there, but in our tests, no, we don't do that.
Gotcha. You know, and we do on our dressage radio show once a month. They talk about Western dressage. It's one of the episodes once a month, and it is so. I mean, the whole Western dressage, whether it's cowboy dressage or Western dressage, that whole world is getting so popular with people. A lot of people who are come from the English side, but also people who have who have trail ridden their whole lives and now are just looking to do something a little bit different. So it is so fast growing. Have you seen that with the cowboy dressage too?
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, definitely. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I know that when we had our first final 4 years ago, we had 500 rides. That was our first finals. As it's progressed, we now this last year, November, we had, I believe it was 989 rides, just under 1,000 rides.
Wow.
We had $40,000 worth of prizes. We had three saddles, I think 34 belt buckles, chinks, donated stuff. Spalding Fly is one of our corporate sponsors. you know, as we go on and we see all this stuff, you know, when we were beginning to do this stuff, we were like 5 years ahead of where we thought we would be in life with Kelber Dressage. It's been a journey that we brought in people. You know, I just got back from another teaching clinic up in Vancouver, Chilliwack. And it was incredible how they had the same question. What was the difference between Western and Cowboy Dressage? Because they had a little bit of disappointments in there because some of the instructors were more dressage-y than they were Western. So we found that out in our judging as we were doing that. We had some judges that were more dressage-y and asking these Western horses to be more classical dressage, which we weren't. So we actually started our own judging school. We've had, I think, 8 graduates in the past 3 years, or 2 years maybe. So we're teaching our own judges. We went into this to where, you know, some of the terminology was very classical dressage, you know, curl and some other term. So we had to go back and I had to change all this and put it into Western terminology for the people. So we've gone through some growing pains and understanding that some of the Western people want their horse to be Western. They don't want classical type dressage horses. They want the Western horse. And this is where I think it's, for us, it's expanded greatly in Cowboy Dressage. I did go to the Western Dressage Finals on the Saturday because it's just down the road from where I live out in Oklahoma. And they had a magnificent turnout down there. They were very good. I watched the horses go. I saw some of the higher level go, which was more dressage, classical dressage to me. But I watched the lower levels go, and it was more Cowboy Dressage to me.
Well, you know,
and how they do.
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting about that too. I did hear a good bit about that through the shows that we do, and that was something that came up there too. Is there were warm bloods there, and there were quarter horses there, and the people who came from the quarter horse side were seeing the judges maybe favoring in some cases the warm blood side a little bit, and so there. I think that that's just growing pains though that you're going to have trying to iron out what exactly because they're so new. You know, really these sports are brand new. It's going to take a while to iron those things out and to really come down to a standard that kind of fits, and it's going to be in the middle someplace. You know, that's...
Yeah, and I agree with you. I agree. That's one of the reasons why the demand that we have, when we first started this, you know, we went to the people that came to us to enjoy this new, you know, equine sport that the four of us sat down and or the partners in it did, you know, and we asked them what they wanted. But this is for the people. This is for them. This wasn't for us. We wanted something out here to change with what's going on in the world. We wanted to help people through helping our horses help the people do what they needed to do. And that's what they came up with. So when we went to some of these shows and had dressage judges, classical dressage judges in there, they didn't like that. They came to us, and so we decided to start our own school. You know, we even, the professionals that have been with us for the 4 and 5 years that have been here, we had people teaching cowboy dressage or were teaching it more like classical dressage or Western dressage. So they encouraged us to start a professional association. So you have to go through certain levels in order to be able to teach cowboy dressage using our name. This was a benefit for them, not basically for the partners, but they worked so hard. They're so devoted to this that they wanted it to be pure cowboy dressage. And this comes back to our lifestyle because it wasn't about a competition. It's about how we live with our morals and we help each other. And the judging is getting better. It's going to go through that process that the dressage judges that are judging the Western dressage, they have to learn more about the Western horse and create in their mind judging a Western horse, not judging a dressage horse with a Western saddle on.
Yeah,
that's why we do it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's right. And again, it'll find its place. You know, these things don't happen overnight. You know, classical dressage has been around for hundreds and thousands of years. So it's like, I want to switch gears a little bit before I do. Is what's the website where people can learn more about cowboy dressage?
If they go on Cowboy Dressage World, they'll give you everything you need on Cowboy Dressage World. If you want it, it tells you about the handshake. It tells you about the courts, the tests, our life, our philosophy, where you can get a hold of different people. You also go on Cowboy Dressage World Professional Association. That gives you the professionals that are slowly but surely being developed in different areas of the United States. They can always get a hold of any of the partners, and we will certainly help you. We have Facebook, Cowboy Dressage Facebook, that Aton puts out. Each of the partners, you know, have their own Facebook. There's plenty of information if you just punch in Cowboy Dressage World that's the main focus on the Cowboy Dressage for what we do.
And that's CowboyDressageWorld.com is the website.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so
I like it. If you're going to make something that the people want, and from what I am understanding, you're keeping it happy and fun and safe for people and horses, and I appreciate that. Now, just so you know, I'm going to pick your brain because you're living in a very beautiful part of Oklahoma. Oh my gosh. And my husband and I just bought property in Norman. So I'm going to pick your brain when we move out to Oklahoma. Don't you think I'm not going to call?
No, the door is open. You're not that far. You're a couple hours away.
Well, I got to ask you before we wrap up here and run out of time, because, you know, Morgans.
That's what Thor could do.
Yeah, I got to talk to you about Morgans. It's a breed that we don't talk about a lot. You know, a lot of people don't realize that at the turn of century, when carriages were still in existence, and the Morgans were really the driving horse for families, they were very popular. And, you know, Morgans are a breed that we don't hear a lot about anymore, yet you've obviously chosen Morgans and do a lot with Morgans. Why Morgans as a breed for you?
Well, you know, I probably sort of fell into it accidentally. You know, I started out in quarter horses when I lived in California as a young man. You know, we had quarter horses and I showed stock horses and, you know, I roped and cowboyed. And then I went to Canada to work for my uncle who had ranches and auction marks up there. I came back and fortunate for me that, you know, I went back to the same barn I was as a child and they had Morgans there. And I just sort of got into Morgans, and then I actually, my first wife, when I got married, you know, she was training Morgans, and I thought a Morgan's a Morgan, a quarter horse is a quarter horse, a nice horse is a nice horse, and I sort of developed into the Morgan, still maintaining outside horses beside the Morgan show string of quarter horses and Arabs. I've been in a multitude of breeds because I want to educate myself on all the different aspects of the horse world with the horses, their gaits, their minds, and, you know, how they felt. But the Morgans, actually, I have to tell you, they're probably one of the nicest horses. They can be cow horses, you know, they can be English pleasure horses, they trot big, they can be hunter horses. They've gone through changes like everybody else has. But I've also found out that they're just a nice horse to be around. I probably couldn't say a nice horse is a nice horse in every breed, but I found out that they're sensitive, they're nice, they're kind, they develop a great friendship with you. You can be great partners with them. Their morals in their life are basically pretty good. So I think that they're just a great horse. Not that there's anything wrong with the other ones. I've had a lot of them, but it just seems showing these horses, you know, fit within how I live my life.
I found it a lot of, and of course, they're still really big over in the driving world, too. I'm a driver, and they're really big in that world as well. And the Morgan owners that I've found said they're very person-oriented. Have you found yours to be that way, that they pick a person? You know, they have their people?
Something like your dog. You know, you walk in there, you know, I could probably walk in the barn, and all the horses, you know, they'll run up and, you know, nicker at you. And then, you know, my wife has got her horses that they run to her. You're absolutely correct. They're very personable and they love people.
Yeah. And they kind of pick a person and, you know, they're very dog-like that way. You're right. That's the description I've heard from other Morgan owners who compete with their Morgans. Well, this has been interesting. I'm glad we got a clarification and I hope we helped out the listeners who were asking about that. Garn Walker, what's your website again?
It would be garnwalkerstables@gmail.com is my email. The website would be Garn Walker. It has my phone number. If anybody has any questions or wants to learn more, obviously, my door is always open to this, especially Cowboy Dressage and how we want to help the people in the world with their horses.
All right. Jamie will be up when she moves to Oklahoma.
That's what my Mustang will do. That's
yeah,
what he'll be good at.
Your Mustang will be good at that, actually.
Get him to slow down.
They love it. It's a good place for them to be in life.
All right. Thanks, Garn. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, there you go. You know, Morgans were so popular in the driving world 50 years ago, and then they kind of you didn't hear a lot about them, and now they're making a comeback.
But the people that have Morgans love Morgans.
Oh,
you also have to realize, too, that unfortunately the Morgans have suffered a bit from the abuse of people that like to show with big shoes and things like that. And they don't get as much publicity as the Tennessee walking horses do, but a lot of Morgans have suffered a lot of abuse at the hands of trying to do big lick stuff. And in my opinion, I've seen it. And so I think they are they're going to have to make a comeback from that. Get them out of the show ring, get them doing things like this, so get the Western dressage. They're such personable horses. They make excellent kids horses because they are so people oriented. They're just, to me, like, not a sweeter breed out there than the Morgan horse. So I think once people start using them for what God intended, as opposed to what they think they should have in Shelbyville, Kentucky or Tennessee, then we'll be in better shape.
And you can send out your some of them that are doing very well in CDEs right now, like championship level. Yeah, because they're just so. Well, they'll just give you everything. Morgans are
they
really
can
good
do though. Anything too. Yeah. They're like Arabs. They can just go and do the endurance stuff. They can event. They can. They're just a jack of all trades kind of horses. So
and they tend not to be too large. They tend not to be, you know, the 18 handers. So they're easy for anybody to handle. Which is
I've got to do the DNA test because I'm pretty sure that Zeus has some Morgan in him.
Oh, that's right. You haven't done the DNA for Zeus yet.
No, I need to get on that. Okay, I'll work on it today.
There you go. There's along with taking a nap and making sure that your fields don't flood again. Actually, when you disappeared, I thought maybe the flooding had overtaken the house. And
yeah, I don't know what happened. My laptop just died.
I don't know what happened there. Let's do our horseware. We have our grooming tip talking about keeping your blankets clean over the winter. So we're going to do that, and then we're going to come back. We have some fun things for you, and then Victoria is going to be on later in the day. She hasn't been here for a couple of weeks, but she's going to be joining us with the European Report all coming up on today's show. This winter grooming tip is brought to you by Horseware Blankets. Joining us are two of the top grooms in the country of Enter Philip Dutton's groom, Emma Ford, and Kat Hill from World Class Grooming. Our horseware winter grooming tip of the week, we have Emma with us who's going to talk a little bit about keeping your blankets clean throughout the winter season. First of all, Emma, you're supposed to do that? Keep your blankets clean? I thought you just let them get all gross and then washed them at the end of the year.
Well, I mean, if you like crusty blankets by January, then that's down to you. But we like to not be holding our noses every time we put a blanket on a horse come January, February. So hopefully these couple of tips will help those guys. But so obviously, depending on where you are in the country, you know, for a lot of us, our horses are in blankets the end of September and end up staying in blankets through to the beginning of April, end of April, depending on the weather. Any overwashing of any blanket is, you know, not a good thing unless it's just a cotton sheet, because you can destroy the fill. Also, if you overwash the outside of a turnout, you know, it actually takes away the effectiveness of the waterproof layering. So even every day, if you can, before you take the blanket off the horses, take a good stiff hard brush and knock the worst of, you know, the shavings or straw. And also obviously if they come in from outside, then you're going to knock the worst of the mud off. Should you come in with that sodden horse that's got a nice bit of mud all over its blanket, then we actually just hose it down. And, you know, no, don't use any detergent. We just hose it down and let it dry naturally outside. As for the underside, the actual easiest way to keep your blankets nice and fresh would be to have some sort of underwear. We like to use like very breathable cotton sheets. The Amigo Stable sheet that also has a neck is easy to put on, fits really well, and they're a nice product that you can have two of and just switch them in and out as you wash them. And then the other thing you can do is use an ammonia neutralizing agent, such as one part vinegar to three parts water. And you can spray this on the areas of the blanket that is particularly have manure stains, pea stains on. And this helps to get rid of that nasty pea smell.
Makes them smell like a salad, but the pea smell's gone.
Yes. Salad over pea.
So the recommendation there would be the Amigo Stable sheet underneath to help keep that, which is easily washable, which is a
exactly.
Good suggestion. Yeah, great. Well, Emma, I know you guys have a terrific website. Where can I find that?
You can find us at worldclassgrooming.com, which is also our Instagram, Gmail account. So come and find us and look for our book on any equestrian website, World Class Grooming for the Competition Horse.
This tip was brought to you by Horseware. Have you ever wanted to own your own Rambo? Well, here's your chance. From October 3rd to November 23rd, receive $50 off any Rambo turnout blanket, including the Rambo Duo, the Optimo, the Original, the Supreme, and all the others in the Rambo turnout line. All you have to do is trade in your old turnout from any brand for a horse in need. Simply visit horseware.com/trade for more information and fill out the form for the voucher you will need to get your $50 off. The complete list of retailers is at horseware.com/trade as well. Open to U.S. and Canadian residents only. Go to horseware.com/trade today and replace that blanket with all the holes for one of the best blankets on the market, the Rambo Turnout Line. Well, Jennifer, tell us again what this health tip is about, hay and weeds and things. Does it need any introduction, or are we good to go?
It's the weed scientist. That's all we need to know.
Okay, well, let's take a listen for our health tip of the week.
All right.
Well, we have today with us assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which sounds really cold, and his name is Dr. Mark Rentz. Good morning, Dr. Rentz.
Good morning, and you're right, it is very cold up here.
I love it that Jennifer wrote here that you are a weed scientist. Do you call yourself a weed scientist?
I do, and it is kind of a unique position, and I get a lot of hassles.
I bet you do.
But yeah. I think it's a really, is appropriate. I'm interested in studying plants that aren't supposed to be there, and that's what a weed is, and trying to develop and educate people on how to manage those plants so they don't cause problems. You know, like for horses, toxic, poisonous plants is a big concern, and that's one of the things that we work on.
All right, let's talk about hay and weeds and all that stuff. Now, I'm a horse husband, and one of the fears that we horse husbands have, especially when our wives are away, is we get this list of things that we're supposed to do. And one of the things we're supposed to do is feed hay. But now, not only are we supposed to feed hay, with our lack of training, we're also supposed to determine whether the hay is moldy, you know, whether there's weeds in there that they shouldn't have, that kind of thing. So what am I supposed to look for?
Well, you know, it's a challenge, and I think, you know, one of the reasons it is such a challenge, and this is where I come off with full disclaimer, is I'm a plant person. So I love plants, I'm into plants, and I understand that, but are you a plant person? No, I'm guessing you're an animal person, right?
No, that's correct, yes. Who has to feed plants to my animals? Yes.
That's right, and so there's just not a lot of knowledge that's out there, and plants are really unique creatures. You know, they are very different than animals, but I think that, you know, understanding in that hay, understanding just a few simple concepts can really help you understand, like, well, is this hay good, is it not, and I've kind of come up with a list of three things that you should be kind of looking for.
Okay.
But, you know, first off, I think the key point to realize is horses need decent quality forage hay, but they don't need dairy quality forage, you know, which is pure alfalfa most of the time. So I'm guessing most of your listeners and other people are feeding a mixture of legumes, which we call that could be alfalfa or other clovers, with grass. Is that what you're feeding your animals?
Yeah, we actually don't even do the alfalfa mix with ours. I think Jamie does, but we don't do the alfalfa mix with ours only because we have two fat horses that would, you know.
Yeah, and so I think that the misconception a lot of people get is they need this ultra-high dairy quality hay, and that's not the case. They need decent hay quality, pure grass, depending on the species of grass, can provide that, and a mixture of clovers or alfalfa and grass can do that very, very well. So here's my top three things that if you are feeding hay that you should be looking for. And you should feel good because you nailed the first one. You should not feed moldy hay to your animals. So that's a real simple step one to do.
You got something right, Glenn.
I did.
Something right, Glenn.
See, I learned something in 25 years.
And I think that's a real simple thing to do, because often those diseases that are causing that mold can produce material that can actually make your horses sick. And it's really dependent upon what that is, the plant that the mold's growing on, and the mold itself. Actually, if you ever heard of warfarin or coumarin, which is a blood thinner, that was actually discovered in Wisconsin from people that came to us with moldy hay. My mother is actually taking it right now. So it can actually thin the blood of your horses and cause all kinds of issues. So that's a real simple thing to do. As you're taking that bale of hay out and putting it in a feeder or spreading it on the ground, however you feed it, just be looking for some mold. If you see that mold, it's not a good thing to feed. Now, they can tolerate small amounts of it, but I would say if you're seeing it consistently through hay, that's a sign that you shouldn't be feeding your hay.
Okay.
Okay, so that's one. Two, and this kind of gets at the whole concept of forage quality, particularly if you're feeding a lot of grasses, is you should be, as you're feeding that hay, be looking for forage, particularly those grasses, if they're mature. And what do I mean by that? Do they have seed heads present and seeds are kind of coming off in the hay? And so why should you be concerned about feeding mature forage? Well, as forage matures, those grasses, and if you're feeding alfalfa or clover mature, their forage quality goes down. And it goes down dramatically to where it's not really nearly as valuable as it typically would be. So if you're seeing a lot of seed heads on your grasses, that's probably an indication that that quality of that forage is low, and you're going to have to feed something else to your animals to make sure that they're nice and happy. Do you often see seed heads in your forage when you feed it or your hay?
We don't, but I do know what you're talking about. In the past, we've had that problem, and it's basically, and a lot of times that will happen on years when it's extra rainy, and the farmers haven't had a chance to get their hay in till late. When it actually goes to seed, and that's a lot of times when you'll see it is weather related, and the farmers just haven't gotten to it.
Yep, I think that's just reality of farming and them getting to it too. You know, it's tough to get that stuff out of the field in rainy years sometimes. So sometimes you don't have a lot to say, but if you're there looking at fine hay, and
it's not bad for them. It's not bad for them. It just doesn't have the nutrient value that before it goes to seed.
You got it. You got it. Yep, that's absolutely right, too. So lower nutrient quality, you might have to supplement with something other with a little bit more protein in it in particular, too.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of times that's out of our control. When you're buying that hay, that's the time to be looking for that. So that's number two. And then the third one, which is... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Can I ask a question about that real quick? So I've always wondered this. When I do throw the hay onto the pasture, like with grass pastures, and I throw the hay and I see all the seeds come down, will those seeds germinate in my pasture? Or is it just, are they like toasted because they've already been dried?
No, in many cases, depending on the species, they will actually germinate in your pasture. So that's a really good question and a really good point. So if it's forage species like, say, red clover or something like that seed that's going down there, that could be a really good. But if it's a weed species like a foxtail or something you don't want, that's not such a good thing. So I think,
I always thought it was like free grass seeds. Like, here you go, free grass. Yep. Planting it in my pasture.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think in some cases you can get some benefits. Grass seed is pretty cheap, though, in general, though. If you really want to improve your pasture, it's probably better to buy some grass seed
versus
relying on the hay, because who knows what that is and what the quality of that seed is. But that's a great question. Great question.
All right. Number three.
Okay. So the third one tends to be quite a bit harder, but really what it comes down to is inspecting that hay for two things: weed species. So again, the definition of a weed is a plant you don't want growing there. So not that forage species that you want. And sometimes that can be really tough to identify, or an insect. And so usually when you see insects in your hay, that's usually a bad sign that there's something going wrong there too.
The other thing, I'm going to add another thing to that, and that's dead animals and snakes. Just throw that in there, because I've been down that road before. I hate opening a bale of hay and there's a dead snake in there. It's like, oh!
I've actually experienced that as well for a plant person, and that's actually a great third addition to there.
Yeah.
Now, weeds can be hard to identify, too, and, you know, I think my recommendation is, you know, what weed species are common in your area can vary dramatically. Check with your local county extension agent or your other representative, maybe who you're buying that hay from if you're going to a feed store, to ask what weeds you need to be worried about. A lot of your weeds, and if you guys have pastures, have seen it, actually are pretty desirable forage. Many of the broadleaf weeds like lamb's quarter, common ragweed, many of the horses will eat and have pretty good forage quality. There's just a couple, a handful usually in each region that we're really worried about, and those are generally because they're poisonous or toxic plants.
Right. Okay.
And yeah. And really, you know, the toxic plants, you know, in the upper Midwest are going to be a lot different than Florida than out in the West. You know, you can get online and see a top 10 list of poisonous plants for horse owners, and it's just going to be very regional specific. And so you need to be worry about that a little bit. One warning I will say, though, particularly for urban horse owners, is that many of our landscape plants tend to be very toxic to our horses. So don't be throwing clippings from your yard into your pasture, letting your animals feed on that, unless you're certain that those aren't toxic plants.
You know, you shouldn't be taking clippings from your yard and feeding it to your horse anyway. It's not good for your horse to begin with. But one of the things that, you know, I've opened up hay bales before and seen black leaves mm-hmm. and that really jump out at you. Is the color, you know, color things like that, is that something that could be completely harmless and it's just, you know, after it died, it turned black? Or is it something I should be, you know, aware of?
Well, so usually what that is that's actually a disease that's turned it black. And it's probably an indication that when they harvested it and put it in that bale of hay, it was wet, it was too wet, and so that's some mold or some other type of a fungus. And some of those funguses can be totally harmless, and some can be toxic at certain levels. And so again, use the rule of thumb of if there's just a little bit of it here and there, I wouldn't worry about it. But if you're seeing, you know, it really common in 10 or 20%, you know, that's probably something you don't want to be feeding to your animals.
What's
you should get it checked out.
What's the most common weed that is a problem for horses that horses will eat and is a problem? Is there one that really stands out?
Well, again, it's pretty regionally specific, but I think foxtails are a really good example. We have several foxtail species. You go to different part of the region of the U.S. and there'll be a different foxtails, but foxtails can be a problem because they have low quality, so they're not really good quality. And one of the other issues that they have is they have low palatability, so the horses don't like to eat it, and so they won't use that whole bale of hay. And then the third issue is if they have seed heads present, they can actually get pricked in the eyes, and we can get an increase in incidence of things like pink eye and things like that, too. So that's a real common one that I would be concerned about, just because of those multitude of issues. But really, it's specific to the region. So if you're in Florida versus you're in the Midwest or out west, you know, it's going to be a whole different slew of species you need to watch out for.
We have a problem with oleander, not in the hay, but a lot of people have oleander plants out here, and they're pretty common. And I had heard that one or two leaves could kill a horse. Is that true?
That is absolutely correct. And one of the problems with oleander is the animals like to eat it. Even cows and besides horses will preferentially eat it. And so that's really a concern that you should be aware of, is some of these ornamental plants. And that's why we just recommend not even feeding on it. Red maple is an example out in the Midwest that we are concerned about. Again, remember with toxic plants, it depends on how much of that toxic compound is in the plant. So things like oleander, 1 to 2 leaves, those are ones we really need to be careful about. We have this tree species called box elder, and there's some other species that they have to eat like, you know, 10 or 20 pounds of it to get sick. And so understanding how much they can tolerate is really, really important.
So where do you have a website there for the University of Wisconsin that people can find resources, or do you have a website that you would recommend?
Yeah, we have a couple of websites. I think probably the best website in Wisconsin to do is if they just get in their Google or whatever their web browser and search for just Wisconsin Weed Science. they can get to my website pretty easily. And then if they have some concerns, we actually have a group called Team Forage that looks at forage issues and has lots of information on animals, and particularly horses and forage issues. So they can look at that website as well. So those are probably the two options, and any internet browser and search engine should pop them up real easily.
Very good. Well, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Mark Rentz, assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin, the weed scientist. I love that. I would have that.
Thank you very much.
I would have that really big on my card if I was a weed scientist.
Gosh, that just re-paranoid me about everything. But you know what? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, that guy knows more about weeds than, I mean, he knows his stuff.
He does. And so after that whole segment, obviously I quit feeding hay that had seeds in it. I changed my whole hay dealer because of I had some dirt, then I had some weeds, and then I had foxtail. Mm. And I didn't know that I had foxtail. And here's how it presented itself, just so y'all can keep an eye out for it. All of a sudden, two of the horses weren't letting me put the bridle on. Like Joey, who's like totally fine about everything, he was tossing his head and fussy. And his owner, Abby, was getting very upset. I don't understand. So I just thought, well, let me look at him. And I looked and he had a sore on his lip. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's got a sore on his lip. Poor little thing. It looks like a habronema, which is kind of very common out here. It happens with the flies. You get a little cut, flies legs, it becomes a festering sore. So had the vet out. Vet injects the sore, habronema, no problem. Okay, done. Doesn't get any better. And then Chili won't put the bridle in. Okay, vet comes back out. I said, something's going on here. She lifts up the lips and the gums of the horses, and there are all their gums surrounding their front teeth are totally swollen and full of barbs. So then she inspects all the other horses. All of them have infected, puffy, red gums and barbs in their front teeth. So the foxtail, I bought a mix of grass alfalfa, and the foxtail can be very similar to like an alfalfa pod, you know, like they look very similar, but they are very different because the alfalfa pods don't have sharp barbs in them. So just keep an eye on your hay, look for it. We'll post, on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page, kind of what a foxtail looks like. Yeah, a Timothy pod, Jennifer, sorry, not alfalfa pod. A Timothy pod, and I was buying grass mix, so I thought it was a Timothy pod, but it was actually a foxtail pod. So there is a difference. Keep an eye out for that. And if your horse is all of a sudden, and this is the biggest thing that I learned is, you know, you have to listen to your horses. If all of a sudden your horse won't let you put the bridle on, you know, like the 12-year-old at the time was thinking her horse didn't love her anymore. I'm like, no, it doesn't work like that. He still loves you. He's just trying to communicate to you. And you have to listen to your horse. If all of a sudden he won't let you put
poor
the girth
mouth
on.
Hurt.
Yeah, this is whatever it is. There's something going on. So you have to like look for the reason of why your horse is telling you something. At any rate, I ended up accruing about $900 in vet bills for 3 months. I had to feed the pelleted hay and wet it down for 7 horses, big tubs of wet hay that I had to feed them until their mouth healed. I did get all that money back from the hay dealer. So he paid for everything and paid for the hay that we did not use, took it all, you know, whatever. But at any rate, after that, I just changed dealers. I was like, I don't need this anymore. I let him run his course with getting us a refund and all that. And then we just changed dealers because it's, you can't do that. That was the last straw.
No. And if they don't do something about it and are not real concerned, then there's going to be 10 more batches just like that.
So, well, he got mad at me.
Yeah, exactly. It's your fault that I sold you crappy hay.
Yeah. And so he had his vet come over and look at the hay and the horses and all that. I'm like, I'm not making this up. It's look. So anyway, it ended up being, so just listen to your horses. They'll tell you. And it's a it's a pain. So just keep an eye out for it.
Very good. Did you see, well, I'm going to try and get Victoria on here. Did you see the post I did on Our Horses in the Morning about the guy who was on the safari in Africa?
No.
Okay. So if you go to Our Horses in the Morning page, this was on the Daily Mail, which is my most trusted news source. This guy was on this, he was in Africa doing a, you know, one of those trail rides in Botswana. And there's footage of this. So if you go, it's on our Facebook page already. And so these guys are out on this trail ride in Botswana. They're going through this marshy, grassy area. And all of a sudden, the guide yells, bolt. Apparently, that's one of the things you learn on these trail rides is to bolt. Intentionally bolt. Like, get the hell out of there.
Wow.
Because there was a lion that took up chase and was chasing the horses. Well, this guy falls off. And there's GoPro cameras. There were GoPro cameras on all these riders. So there's video of all this. And you see the lion chasing these guy, and he falls off about 20 feet from the lioness. Now, it's unclear quite what happens after that, and they have the video from different angles. He got away. The lion did not eat him, but the lion was not pleased that they were in her territory and took chase, and he falls off, and right there is the lion. So how would your day feel if you came 20 feet from a lion who's chasing you?
I don't know what I would do. I would be really mad at my horse for abandoning me. How dare you leave me? That, no. And it's one of those, like, I've had falls where you fall, go to fall off, and then you hang on for dear life, and you probably should have let go of the reins, but you, like, hang on because you're going to ride this thing out, and you're sideways underneath your horse. Yeah. That would be me in that situation. I would not let go of my horse. Well, I will hold on to your forelock.
The horse was gone. He was down, and one rider noticed what was going on, the one that was closest to him, and actually circled around and got him out of there. But the other riders just kept going because they didn't know that this guy had fallen off. They were just doing what they were told, bolt.
You know what they should do, really, is they need to shoot that lion, because I mean, now that lion's going to be looking for humans, and probably God forbid
the lion, and Jamie's being very sarcastic, very yes. sarcastic, but probably the lion had some cubs?
Clearly. They're riding through this lion's home, and it's, she's probably got cubs, and yeah, you can see the video of the guy falling off, and
it's a very marshy area, but
oh, it is. It's all watery. Yeah. And oh my. Oh, and she's chasing. She's chasing.
Yeah, she was on a mission.
She, mama's protecting their babies.
Yeah, and the guy, I don't know. It just looked like he slid off the side. I don't know. I would have been off too, of course. You know, if Lord knows if these people had ever ridden before, right? This is a ride in Africa.
She just started galloping, and he kind of galloped off.
Yes.
Like, there was no, like, she didn't, this mare didn't buck or kick or anything.
That was a fun one.
The group had been instructed to bolt after a guide spotted a male lion emerge from behind a mound. Yeah, there's a baby and a mama. So what's funny is I had a friend that went on an African safari, and they had to do one of these bolts. And I think the guy just says, run. And they run, and they run probably, you know, a good mile or so. And then they get stopped, and they're like, what was it? Hippo. Apparently, that's the scariest, most dangerous one you can see on your ride, as the hippo. And the hippo ran along with him for quite some time. He was like, he was right over there the whole time while you're running. And they didn't know because they were just focused on galloping. Woo!
I need to. I'm having trouble getting Victoria here, so of course.
I'm here. Can you
there you
hear
are.
She's here.
I'm Victoria.
I was just listening to you chat.
Yeah, we were talking. Did you see that video on the Daily Mail about the guy who fell off in the safari with the lion chasing him?
I've seen people sharing it, but I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. It sounds quite frightening.
Yeah, how would that make your day, Victoria?
Yeah, no, not so much. Although I do really fancy doing a safari on horseback, but I think it'd be a bit unfair because my other half doesn't ride, so I would be quite happy on
horseback. Yeah, you'd be gone. You'd be successfully bolting, and he'd be getting eaten by the lion.
Exactly.
You know, the one to go down is the slowest one. So you'd at least be safer than he would.
Yeah, exactly.
Victoria, of course, is from Horse and Country TV. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's good to have you back again. Now, you know, we have to talk about the news story and the cake that was making the rounds on all the news. You know, we check the news every day, and my Google News feed today was pictures of a cake. And that's not something we see all the time here in the horse news, but cake after cake after cake, and it was all for one horse.
I haven't even seen any cakes. I've obviously been in a little bubble today.
What are you talking about?
Allegro's retirement. They had a cake. So tell us about Allegro's tribute to Allegro ahead of his retirement.
Yeah, well, he's retiring at the official ceremony at Olympia Horse Show, which is in a month's time. And Olympia has released this amazing video with all these famous people and different riders and Carl and Charlotte themselves talking about how amazing the horse was and what he's done for the sport and for dressage. And and you do see both Charlotte and Allegro's groom Alan bursting into tears in the middle of talking about it. So it just goes to show they can't even film an interview without crying. So I think there's going to be a lot of tears shed over the next 4 weeks.
Well, that's and that happens. That's right around Christmas time, right?
Yeah, exactly. 4 weeks the show will be happening. Okay. So actually 4 weeks today is his official retirement ceremony. So it'll be on the Wednesday night. And he's also, the show starts on Tuesday, which used to be the really quiet day. It's the Grand Prix qualifier for the dressage. And when I started going to Olympia 12 years ago, there'd hardly be anybody there, and now they're expecting it to sell out purely because Allegro is coming, and it's going to be many people's last chance to see him because Wednesday sold out ages ago.
Yeah. they planned ahead for that. Now, I was looking at something really, really cool. It's called Give a Cob a Job, and it's hashtag, I think there's a hashtag that goes along with it, hashtag give a cob a job. And there's a picture that you guys have posted of a very sad looking pinto draft cross thing. And then there's a before and an after, and then after he's all shiny and doing dressage. So talk to me, first of all, what is a cob in your definition?
So a cob is between 14-1 and 15-1 hands high, and it's thick set and has feathers and will sometimes have a hogged mane, but basically a little chunky horse, tend to be weight carrying, and they are really popular. But I think this new campaign by charities, I think they're sort of saying that there's a lot of cobs and rehoming centers, and I think they just want to reiterate to people that they can be brilliant riding horses and go on to do all sorts of careers. So we've got a picture of one going eventing, and we've got the one that you described that was found sort of looking a bit shabby and neglected, and it's now shining in the dressage arena. So it's a really nice thing, and we're thoroughly behind them.
Absolutely. They kind of look like gypsy vanners here.
But yeah, exactly. Like we would, like that bottom horse, we would say is a gypsy vanner, but you can get cobs of different types. And it's just basically anything of that kind of size in between a pony and a horse that is very thick set.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Well, it's hashtag give a cob a job. You can check that out at horseandcountry.tv. And then let's see. Oh, God.
They're coming back. My favorite race of the year. Oh, you guys have Kentucky Derby. You
forget
have all
the Breeders' Cup.
Breeders' Cup races. Forget all of that. The best race of the year is coming back. Right, Victoria?
Indeed. It's the Clydesdales are coming back. So,
Victoria, you're breaking up on us a little there. Let's see if we can get her back. Are you back?
Oh, no. Can you hear me?
I can hear you
guys perfectly.
Yep.
It's the Clydesdale race, which is happening in Exeter Racecourse. And we can't wait to watch it. It's always great fun.
Do you know who's coming on our radiothon? By the way, that's in 2 weeks, and you need to get your voicemail over again. Remember, like you did last year for our 12-hour
yes,
radiothon? Well, we want to know your fantasy ride, any horse in history or current who you would most like to ride and why. But guess who's coming on? He's a Clydesdale owner, and that's Martin Clunes is going to be joining us.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
So he is president of the British Horse Society. So,
He is?
He is, and he and their official show is held at Hickstead, so he comes down every year and loves coming to Hickstead. He's quite into his driving, so he always presents the prizes for the carriage driving.
And of course, you know, very pop. How long has Doc Martin been on a BBC for? 10 years? I mean, it's been
about 10,000 years. Yeah, I think. Yeah.
But he's the star.
Before TV was invented, he was on that.
And a lot of people over here know him from his Netflix specials on horses. You know, so yeah.
Horsepower.
Yeah, Horsepower was one of them, and he has Clydesdales, and so yeah, that's so cool that the Clydesdales are running again. That's always a fun one to watch.
That's going to be November 20th at Exeter Racecourse.
Yeah, perfect. How you say it?
Thank you. Yes, I hear that a lot about my British words.
And Martin Clunes, I think, is from the Southwest, so maybe he'll be there to watch them when he's not busy ringing you guys up.
Very cool. I can't wait to see the video of that. When are you going to ride
in
that?
I did think it was funny, by the way, because I asked Debbie, she was trying to find out what his horses were named, and they're Bruce and Ronnie, which is actually the name of my mother and father-in-law. I was like, perfect.
Named after.
Your giant Clydesdales, mom-in-law.
And then you also, of course, behind the scenes with Jenny Rudel. What was that about?
Oh, no. Yes, so, what did you get to do now? Because she's so awesome.
Well, did I tell you guys that she got to ride Vallegro a few weeks ago?
Yeah, you did.
And
yeah.
So this is more we're releasing. We're really building up this show because Carl Hesser is so popular over here. And the run up to the show, we're releasing lots of videos and articles, so that is a behind the scenes, so you find out, because basically Jenny is doing an interview on horseback and they go for a hack, so it's not just a case of them riding around together. She actually has to get insights from each rider, and so you find out how it's filmed and how the cameras follow them through cantering through fields, etc. So it's worth a watch.
You know who we had on Monday? Actually, Jamie wasn't here, but we had Catherine Bateson Chandler on, who has trained there for the last like 5 years at Carl Hester's barn. And we asked her, "Have you ridden Vallegro?" She said, "Oh yeah, of course. Everybody does.
It's because they warm. What happens is like the riders will all warm the horses up, and then like Carl will get on or Charlotte will get on and do like 25 minutes of hard work with them, and then the riders get back on and cool them down. So that's how it works. So yeah, everybody will get to ride him.
I get to warm up Vallegro. Now that's good. That looks good on your resume, right?
It does. Yeah. It definitely does.
That does look really good. Well, thank you so much, Victoria. Now we look forward to send that sound file over. We want to know your fantasy ride, okay?
Okay.
I can't wait to see who hers is going to be. I mean, it's going to be one of those, God, I wish I would have thought of that.
No pressure or anything.
We've had some surprising ones. Board Martin just did his, and apparently that's surprising. Debbie McDonald, who's the queen of dressage here in the United States, did hers, and I recorded that yesterday. And that was very, very interesting, and I wouldn't have guessed. And Monty's going to be doing his, and Martin Clunes will be doing his on that day.
I wonder if these dressage riders are saying, like, you know, Seattle Slough or something.
You'll be surprised at some of them, because we've recorded some ahead of time. You're going to be surprised at some of them and their answers. It's very interesting. It was a good theme this year.
Yeah, good question. Sorry, I think my dog's trying to tell you her answer too.
What's her fantasy ride?
She would like to ride. Yeah,
it's Kibbles.
She's chasing her reflection, which is her new hobby.
Thank you, Victoria. Horseandcountry.tv.
Talk to you next week.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Well,
it's not fair you're getting to hear all these ahead
I know.
Of time. I'm going to have to listen to 12 hours of radio.
You're going to have to listen to 12 hours to hear them all, because they're going to be spread out through the whole day. And now you know George's, because you were in on that. We recorded that ahead of time. So
George Morris, several.
But you were in on that for sure. Hey, I have a little bit of information for you if you want to hear it about the World Equestrian Games. And that is, they had a meeting in Tryon for the locals, and that happened yesterday. So Bellissimo, Mark Bellissimo went over, and they, of course, the head of Trion and all of the WEG activities. And Jennifer said the head of WEG that's running the activities for WEG and Trion was on the eventing show, so that'll be out later today. But they showed some videos on what it's going to be like, because the locals have some concerns that all of these people are going to be sending on this town of 1,600 people in the mountains of North Carolina. And he did answer some questions, and one of them was, can volunteers sign up already? And the answer was yes. You can go to tryonweg.com and or the Facebook page, and they'll have forms for the volunteers and visitors and all of that that you can fill out if you want to be a volunteer. Now, when they were at Lexington, they had 3,000 volunteers that helped out, and you get in free, and but you have to volunteer. I mean, you're doing stuff, and sometimes it's not pleasant. Sometimes you're on garbage duty. I mean, I think you get to kind of determine where you want to volunteer, but that's not guaranteed. So you could end up doing anything. They're talking about, they did ask a question, how much the event will be at night, and most of it's done during the day. I don't remember too many events that went into the nighttime. I don't remember too many, unless what the jumping or dressage went a little long, but most of it's done during the day. They're saying, they asked the question that's interesting, because remember, Trion has built out, what, $100 million worth of stuff over the last couple of years? They're asking, will there be major construction over the next 18 months? And they said they'll build some things, but they're already prepared for all of the disciplines. They said they already have 9 months of horse shows. They're going to have to build out a cross-country course. Jennifer, was that brought up? Because the cross-country course is not four-star level.
The cross-country course, they're going to be making use of a golf course that they recently purchased.
Yes.
We ride on the golf course!
Which is every horseback rider's fantasy, is to ride across the cross-country course, making extra special sure to put hoof prints on the greens. So, and apparently it's an Arnold Palmer designed golf course. I'm not sure why they bought it. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if it's going to go back to being a golf course, but I think that's pretty awesome.
So we can look forward to having sand traps, a little sand rough. Trap. Yeah.
But apparently their big thing is 100% of the track is going to be what they're calling, I think they call it manufactured. But all of the footing throughout the entire track is going to be put there purpose specific. It's there to be a cross country course. And apparently that's going to be the only course in the United States that's designed that way.
Oh, wow.
They said that the ground there is gently rolling versus what might people who are familiar with that part of the countryside tends to be, you know, straight up, straight down, side of a mountain. Yes. And they said it's going to be an awesome course to watch because of that. So we're going to cross our fingers and hope that really comes through. They're not going to have to clear forest, right? It's already cleared.
That's true. Everybody wants to know where they're going to stay.
Well, okay. Let me continue. Another question was, what about traffic and parking? And if you remember right, when we had him on, Jamie, I asked him about that because it was an issue. It wasn't an issue in Kentucky because they took over the neighboring farms and basically parked thousands of cars in fields and then bus people over. So he says, we have met with the Secretary of Transportation for North Carolina and going to put together the country's and state's best experts to work on the problem, which means they haven't addressed it yet. We will have 5 or 6 different entrances, which will distribute the load, but there's one road. It's 1 4-lane highway. We will also use satellite transportation. So if you're in Charlotte, we will have a bus route that comes here. Now keep in mind, Charlotte's an hour away. We'll have a network of buses and transportation lines that come into the venue. Traffic is the biggest issue. We don't want a lasting memory to be the traffic problems for the community or the spectators. It's going to be something that they're going to have to deal with, because it was an issue in Lexington, but they were set up. They had practice with Rolex and, you know, the state police. There were thousands of them there, and it just seemed like that it worked pretty well from what I experienced, and I was there every day. All right. Now, what is the situation or plan for hotels? Well, the plan that we all have is we're staying at Stephanie's farm in our campers. That's our plan. The rest of you are on your own. But he did have an answer. We have a commercial area now under development, which will include, okay, How many people came to WEG? What did they say, Jennifer? 60,000?
Yeah, for this WEG, they're estimating a total of 550,000, averaging 40 to 70 a day, I think he said.
Okay, so this was his answer. We have a commercial area now under development that will include a 180-room hotel. Okay, that will be open by the fall of 2018 to complement the current on-site lodging, cabins, RV spots, and existing hotel. All right, so we're probably up to 500 at this point. You may have also heard about the manufacturing facility we bought in Forest City, which will be manufacturing some of the things we will need here.
I'm not sure what those things are.
I'm assuming he means mobile homes. I don't know what he means by that. But that does not answer the question for the other 60,000 people where they're staying.
Airbnb, here we come.
Will there be central housing bureau set up for people to find lodging? Now, that was set up during 2010. You could go to this. I don't know how well it worked. It worked somewhat. We will be setting up an online opportunity to post your rental homes, lake homes, mountain homes, 5-bedroom homes, things like that. We will also have it online where you can log on, put pictures in. We want to control the booking experience so a person could call one number and get reservations. I think there's going to be a lot of people having to get together with houses because they're going to be outrageously expensive.
I think group effort is key here.
Yeah.
Find as many friends as you can, because renting a house that can sleep up to 9 for $1,500 for 4 days, well, if you have 9 people to split that, that's not a bad deal. But if it's just 2 Joe Schmoes going to WEG, be prepared. Yeah.
Now, they did ask about test events, because as anybody that's familiar with WEG knows, they usually do, or the Olympics, they usually do test events, a year before. And, it's just to get the kinks out on all levels. And that was asked, and he said, we have done 4 of the 8 disciplines here, jumping, dressage, para dressage, and eventing. Test events will be done for driving, vaulting, endurance, and reining in 2017. So it sounds like they're considering the other shows that they have done, that we've already tested that. And, I don't want to pick on them. They got 18 months to get this done in what normally takes, it took Lexington 6 years. Yep. So,
and they already had everything.
Yeah. And they had a horse park. Now they had to build a lot of buildings. And, there's going to be very little new construction here. They just don't have time. They don't have time to put in a new arena, right? They talked about ticket pricing. What are the plans for ticket pricing? And basically, we anticipate $25 to $30 tickets just to get in, to watch the demonstrations and the vendors. And then, of course, everything else is going to be much more expensive. It always is. So one of the things, and it came up apparently, Jennifer said, you'll hear it on the eventing show, that there was a complaint about price gouging. And there was some price gouging going on in Lexington, hotels and restaurants and just everything. That's what happens when Olympics. You probably saw that in Atlanta. You were in Atlanta during the Olympics, right? Everything, yes. There's always price gouging.
It was awful. I mean, the whole city freaked out, and they made pop-up bars, and everything got expensive, and the traffic, I've tried to get to the horse events, and traffic was insane, and there wasn't even 50,000 people going to it. I wish them the best of luck. I think they'll pull it off, and they're going to be amazing, but boy, howdy, they have a lot of work to do.
Now, I'm going to show some confidence here, and we're going to be starting the WEG show, so we'll be covering all of this pretty in-depth. We did for Lexington. When Samantha and I did the WEG show the last time, we really talked to the organizers every week. We were keeping an eye on everything about it.
I would be positive, too. I mean, there's no reason to be negative. They're going to...
Bellissimo is the reason I'm positive. The man gets stuff done. And money doesn't seem to be a problem. And for him, if money's not a problem, that was a problem in Lexington because it was partly state-run, right? So it was always an issue in Lexington. Alltech saved the day in Lexington. Alltech's the one that came in with... ended up being $50 or $60 million to save the day. But Bellissimo has deep pockets, and he does not want to be embarrassed. So he will make this happen, and it'll probably come off better than any WEG ever has. I have full confidence in the man, and I don't know him. I'm not being paid by him. I just know what he's accomplished.
If you want to pay us, it's okay.
Yeah, if he wants to sponsor the new WEG show coming out starting in January, that'd be fine. And actually, we have quite a few sponsors that are looking at coming on board with that show right away. But yeah, I think it's going to work. I think it's going to be fine. And I think they're going to pull it off. Now, will you have a hotel that is like we do at Rolex, where we drive 10 minutes and we're there? No. You're going to be an hour and a half away. And it's just going to have to be in your plan.
I have a 2014 Bison 3-horse living quarter trailer for sale. If anybody is interested, just send me a message, jamie@horseradionetwork.com. That would be the perfect home. I've stayed in it for a month at Monty Roberts' place. So it's very comfortable, has slides. You'll be fine.
And Stephanie, who you know who you are, who has offered to put up the hosts for the Horse Radio Network. And then if there's room, other people. With Stephanie, I want you to know that we're reserving our spots now. Okay? So don't give those away. I think she has, what'd she say, like 20 acres on the side of a mountain. So we might be at a little bit of an angle in that trailer you talked about.
Just dig the toilet at the bottom of the hill. That's all you got to do.
That's key.
She did say I might have to rent a porta potty if all these people are descending on her property. But
not on the hill.
Yeah, that'd be interesting too. I don't know. I'm excited to see it. I'm still excited about it. I think I feel confident because Bellissimo's involved that this thing is going to happen. And listen to more about the organization. And who was the host on the eventing show this week, Jennifer?
It was Joe and Max.
Oh, well, that's good. Joe doesn't pull any punches.
He doesn't pull any punches. No. He was right there on it.
So
that's right.
You know, and Joe's, he's got that New Zealand attitude. So I'd be anxious to hear that. I can't wait to hear that interview. And that'll be coming out later today on the eventing show. Well, there was one other thing too I wanted to bring up. What was it about? Totally lost my train of thought. I was so excited about telling you all about WEG and some of the non-answers there. Are you playing? Is this something that you would like to do? Did you go to WEG at all in 2010?
No, because you hired me and then you said, "Oh, you can start after WEG."
Oh, that's right. But yeah, we weren't doing anything until WEG was over, and you started right after WEG.
Yeah, and I was like, well, can we come to WEG? And you were like, I'm sorry.
You know, we barely got passes. We had to fight to get media passes for WEG. It was down to, very few people know this, we actually had to call the guy who was in charge of Alltech, who became our friend through all of that, Dr. Lyons, and we called Dr. Lyons the day before because they said, no, we didn't approve you for passes. And we had done the WEG show for 2 years. Dr. Lyons, we had our passes in about 10 minutes.
They were handwritten
and we had exclusive rights to go anywhere because they were handwritten and basically signed by Dr. Lyons. So we had the best.
Thanks, what you know, it's who you know.
Exactly. No, it's not even who you know, it's who knows you. So and we're hoping that it'll be easier to get press passes this year now that Horse Radio Network's a little bit larger than it was. The only reason Jennifer was there was you worked for a vendor.
Yes, I did. I worked for a vendor for 12 of the 16 days. So, yeah. I didn't get to see a lot of horses, but I met a lot of people from all over the world. It was pretty cool.
Shopping was crazy. If you think Rolex is a shopping mecca, or even Quarter Horse Congress or Equine Affair, it was nothing. And I don't know if it's going to be that large at this WEG, but oh my God.
Well, halfway through, we literally ran out of a third of the stock because we were selling a lot of the branded WEG World Equestrian Games clothing. And it was just gone. It was going on the black market. People were buying it and trading it on the black market. It was crazy.
The Ariat products, Ariat had the contract for all the WEG merchandise. You sold out of that in what, 4 or 5 days?
So people were selling the little jacket that the volunteers got for free for volunteering for X number of days. People could sell those for giant bucks. It was crazy. It was just it was like Comic-Con. Yeah. I can't wait till the next one. I'm getting goosebumps already.
Now, there was also a ton of demonstrations that went on at that WEG, so I don't know if they're going to be doing that this year. It sounds like they want to do some of it, but there were a ton of demonstrations. So and that was included as free, so you could see, all the different breeds were there. The horse ball teams from Canada who ended up at our house one night, they were there, and so that was a lot of fun. So there was so much activity in addition to the competitions. So, Jamie, we have to make sure that you at least least get to see part of this wag.
I'm coming.
It'll be so much fun. You'll have a blast.
I'm coming. All right. I'm going to go back to bed now.
All right. Go back to bed. I think she's already dozed off on us. So thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Trail tomorrow. And then Jamie back on Friday. Really bad ads. And hopefully all our technology will be back in place and working a little bit better than it was today. And we'll get your voicemails in. Remember, holidayradiothon.com. Get them in by Friday. That's the last day to get the voicemails in. Thank you, everybody. See ya.
Thank you, everybody. Spay, neuter, geld.